Welcome back to the Mawadising Show, the visiting place. I'm Shirley Nordrum.
And I'm Sharon Nordrum.
This is a show about visiting folks, about their art, their music.
The art of living. So if you know somebody with something cool that they do and you would like to have them interviewed for our show, please give me a call at 218-308-4818.
Today we're visiting with Clyde Estee Jr. over here in Natawash. Good morning, Clyde.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for sitting down with us today to have this conversation about your basket making. You want to tell us your story? How did you get started? And
well, I've been doing it now for about, first of all, I'm a third generation basket maker. I learned from my father, and in turn, he learned from my grandmother, which would have been his mother-in-law, actually. So in 98 and 99, I guess, is when I pretty much got started. And he got in pretty bad health, and that's when I decided I better learn, because there's, you know, very few people that teach it or that do it any longer.
Right.
It's kind of a lost art form now, so that's how I learned, and then from there I just kept going, and pretty soon I was introduced to certain schools and stuff, and they like me to keep teaching it, so that's what I've been doing for quite a few years now. Over 20 years now.
Do you worry that they're, you know, like, I've seen your baskets, the pictures of them, and they're beautiful. Do you worry that there's no one around that really picks it up and does it to the, you know, you got to do things to be good at it, right? So
yeah, it's something you just can't, you know, pick up and set down. You know, it's like anything else. You got to work with it, you know.
Right.
But I'm retired now and stuff, and I can spend the time to do it. Whereas other people, it's hard for other people because they, you know, they got their day jobs, you know,
right.
So they just can't spend the time. But there's few around that I've had at the shop and they picked it up. They really enjoy doing it. But like I say, they just can't spend the time like I can with it, you know.
Right.
But there are people that have learned the process and, you know, they can do a good job at it, you know.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
So there's going to be people that'll carry on this tradition.
Yeah, I sure hope so. At one time, just in this village here, there was probably 6 or 8 elderly Native ladies that did it at one time. But of course, now they're all passed, you know. So it's, you know, it's important to keep this going, you know.
It's very important. Mm-hmm. How do you worry about the emerald ash borer impacting your
that's on the back of my mind a lot because it's getting closer. I mean, it pretty much devastated Michigan.
Yeah.
And it's been in Wisconsin and southern Minnesota, and the forestry around here, they've been kind of keeping tabs on them. I don't know if there's a certain type of trap they put out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is, so they've been kind of keeping an eye on things. So I haven't run into any yet. I'm just hoping. I don't know why they have to pick ash to be the ones that they go after, you know.
Yeah.
Why don't I go after some of these other kind of, you know. But, yeah, it's pretty devastating to the ash trees, so. But hopefully they find something that, you know, will do something with them. I don't know what
hopefully
it is.
Hopefully it isn't another invasive species.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens, you know.
Well, I've heard, you know, some of the science out there says that, you know, if you have 3 days of 35 below, that, you know, 3 straight days of 35 below, that that bug is like right below the surface and it can't live past that. But then you got to pray for the really cold weather.
Yeah.
To come in, and I can handle 3 days of 35 below in a row.
Yeah.
To have ash trees.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you have a hard time finding trees anymore that are good for baskets? What are you looking for when you look for a good tree?
It's got to be, it takes quite a while to find a decent tree. We have a lot of ash trees on the reservation and, you know, this area here. You know, there's a lot of ash trees. But to find the right one, a straight one, the right size, there can't be any knots on it, no bends in it. And the growth rings on the tree itself have to be at least 1/4 or 1/8 inch, because we hand split them to get that shiny part on the outside of the basket. So
That's how you get that shiny part or silky part. So if you get them too thin, then you can't split them. So it takes, there's been a few times I'll go in the woods and be home in an hour or shop in an hour, but not very often anymore. You got to go quite a ways out in the woods now to get a decent log. They're not going to be right by the road where you can just, you know, load them up and cut them and load them up. It just never happens that way.
Somebody already took those ones.
Yeah. It's quite a process just getting them.
So did you do this with your dad for before you made a decision that, oh, this is something I have to
Yeah, I worked with, yeah, I worked with my dad. But just to learn, I wasn't selling any of them, or I wasn't, you know, teaching class, because I just felt I wasn't qualified enough, you know. Mm-hmm. Until I started working with it longer, then I decided, well, you know, here's the time, you know. First one that hired me, I believe, was the Bugganistic School up there in Bean, up that area. And I was kind of afraid in a way of teaching it, because I wasn't sure I was qualified enough for myself, mm-hmm. you know. But after I got there and stuff, you know, it worked out fine. So I've been working with them for quite a few years now.
Do you do that every year with them?
Yeah, they have that language camp every June.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so they usually invite me up there for a week. So.
Is that how long it takes you? You know, you take time with the youth and teach them all the way. Do you take them out to show them what a good tree looks like? Or do you bring...
We just don't have enough time.
No time, yeah.
At one time, I was taking the actual log up there, and you know, I'd show them how to pound the log, you know, get the strips off the log, and that. But they got to have so many kids, I couldn't spend that much time. So I ended up just taking material up there already cut and ready to roll. And the only thing we did there at the school was dye the product, you know, the different colors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really because they had too many kids, so I just couldn't spend. You know.
So what's the ideal class size for you to be able to do it from start to finish?
6 to 8 students would be perfect. And I'd like to have a week to do a good job. Because the first day is just working on a log. You don't get any weaving done. Second day is cutting the material, splitting it, learning how to do that. Third day is dyeing it, the material. The fourth day is actually doing the weaving. And it's got to set overnight, the basket, because it's got so much moisture in it, it shrinks. So you can't do it all in one day, putting up the basket, so that's got to sit overnight. So now you're already to Friday.
Right.
To actually, you know, finish the product. So you almost have to have a week.
And if you're really going to get into it, you'd probably be good to have 2 weeks, you know. Make 2 baskets or, you know.
Right.
Learn to put some of that fancy, that twist in there, that, you know, that takes time.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time just on the, you know, decorative parts on them, you know, not counting just the weaving part, so.
Do you ever have anybody come and want to apprentice with you? And
I have. In fact, I just finished a 3-month program through the art place there in Menominee there.
Gijiga?
Yeah, and I had one student. I mean, which was great, because then you could spend all the time. You could devote all your attention to this one student. Mm-hmm. You know, go through all the little things, you know, where you can't with a class of kids. You know, you just can't go through every little detail. So that was a 90-day program from them. So
nice.
And we were allowed so many hours a week, you know, 15, 20 hours a week. So... yeah, she did a real good job. I was real, real happy with her.
So do you have baskets in museums yet?
You know, yes, I guess they do. I have the one in Mille Lacs.
Oh, cool.
Museum. Yeah, they have one or two there. I have a couple large baskets displayed at Walker, at the casino there in a glass case, right where they sign up for hotel rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some there. I do sell quite a few baskets. I go to different gift shops at casinos and sell quite a few. And then the trading posts, I just had mailed some down to trading posts, which is right by the Lacs Museum. And that's through the Historical Society who funds them.
Awesome. I wonder if, you know, sometime in the... Do you promote yourself as an artist? Do you have, like, you know, sometimes, well, like, to Melvin Lash, for example, mm-hmm. the quill worker, and he has his art in all kinds of museums. But he's good at promoting himself, and he's well known for that. Mm-hmm. Are you promoting yourself as, you know, your basket making, or are you kind of the quiet artist that just sits back and...
Yeah, I don't... there's a lot of people that just... they do see my work. I don't have a web page or anything else.
No?
Yeah, it would be great for sales and for to get out there. But I have a lot of baskets overseas already.
Oh, yeah?
I guess I'm fairly well known, you know. So, I'd say within 200 miles radius of here, yeah. You know, a lot of people know I do it. So, I would be kind of afraid to get a web page and stuff like that because I really don't have any help.
Right.
And, you know, what if somebody told me, hey, I want 12 of those large baskets and can you get them to me in 2 weeks? You know, it's not going to happen, you know. The money.
I'm an artist, not a miracle worker.
Yeah, the money would be great. I mean, because you could almost name your price. But, you know, it's not always about the money here, you know. Everybody's got to have money. But, you know, I enjoy teaching it more or less, more than, you know, just the part of selling myself.
Yeah, so that's good.
That's important.
I thought you were famous. I mean, you know, I thought everybody knew Clyde Esty in the basket making. So in my realm of thinking, you're famous basket maker. So that's kind of, I was wondering if you were in museums and things like that. Just because mm-hmm. I think that I love the black ash baskets. They're just so incredibly beautiful. But I also think that there's a lot of, you know, collectors of art that really don't know about black ash baskets. They didn't realize how beautiful they are, that they're out there. Till, you know, they're wandering through somewhere and then they... Oh, wow, isn't that an incredible basket, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, there was... More people are identify the birch bark basket work mm-hmm. and stuff than they do black ash and say, you know, what's black ash, you know? I'd like to see your birch bark work or something. Well, actually, I said, I don't do birch bark, I do black ash. I said, I know how to do it, but I keep busy enough with just my ash, you know, that I don't have time to do any work with any other material. You know?
Yeah. Well, and then the ash is so time consuming. I mean, pounding those strips is...
Yeah, there's a lot of physical work to it. Johnny, you find out who wants to be a basket maker, you know, after they pound a log for about 4 or 5 hours, then they decide whether they want to be a basket maker. But it's part of the process. Yeah. And if there was an easier way to do it, I would have... Like to find out. I wish somebody could tell me because I'd be doing it.
I was watching a video about some ash basket makers from Michigan, and I can't remember their name. They're a family of basket makers,
mm-hmm.
and in the village where they live, there's still quite a few basket makers, and they were talking about waking up in the morning. And, you know, you could tell who was already out working on the log by the way they pounded. Pounding. Yeah, that the, mm-hmm. Oh, so-and-so is already up working on their log. Because mm-hmm. it reverberated, you know, through mm-hmm. the forest and the village. That everybody has their own rhythm of mm-hmm. of pounding that that basket. It's kind of mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah.
So how many schools do you teach at besides Bug School?
Well, Deer River School District. Go up there once or twice a year. I have been a reamer. Reamer Grade School over in the Reamer area. Fond du Lac. I've been up to Fond du Lac. Taught a high school class up there. But normally it's Deer River and the Bug School. And then also, I have, of course, I have, from time to time, I'll do it at charter school in Etowah here too. Sixth graders.
It's just so good to hear that, you know, the youth are knowing that that's out there. Mm-hmm. That it's something that they can do. And keeping those traditions going, you know. Like you said, a lot of people don't know about the black ash baskets.
Hmm.
So what's your favorite kind of basket to make?
Well, I like making the large ones. They're just, they take a lot longer to do. I probably get 16, 18 hours in them, but you can be more creative because you got more space to work with your design work and stuff. And your design work shows up better on a larger, you know, body, you know, of a basket. So, and then, you know... It just makes it a nice looking, nicer looking basket when you The smaller ones are real popular baskets too, because you know people are, you know, aren't going to have the money to, you know, get the larger ones, because I use outside and I use put handles on the larger one, and so it's more time consuming, and the more work, of course, you got to have more, you know, more money for them. You know?
Exactly. Do you ever feel like you? Do you feel like you get the value for the price of your baskets that you're able to charge them? You got 18 hours into a basket.
No, you don't. You know, it's like beadwork, and all these other artists will tell you the same thing. They get in the ones that make regalia. They get so much time, and they never get their money.
No.
You get way less than minimum wage.
Right. When I was figuring out, I was figuring $10 an hour, and you know, $10, that's not really bad, but then it's not really great either.
No.
I mean, it takes, you know, a person, you know, you gotta be making $12-$15, and you know, just to kind of have some extra, you know,
yeah,
in wages, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't do it every day, so I kind of make it as I go.
Yeah.
But it's been enough for me.
Well, that's the thing I noticed about artists is that the reality of an economic market is, you know, if you figure your time of going to find that tree, pounding it, you know, all the expenses that you put into that, if you're looking at it truly economically, most people probably wouldn't be able to afford your baskets. Because how many people can do it, you know?
You can't ask. You'd have to ask $500-$600 for a basket, you know. You know, maybe somebody out there to pay that much for them, but otherwise you wouldn't. You know, you're just never going to get your money with all your time and work in it.
It's the love that keeps most artists going. The love of their craft.
Yeah, you have to like to do it. If you don't like to do it, then you know you're just not going to do a good job, and you know, just not going to be happy. You know.
Yeah. I've made a couple of tiny ones, like in the classes you're talking about, and I can tell you, I really don't think I'm a basket maker.
I can tell you she's not a basket maker.
Well, it takes time, you know, it takes time. But I will say, most people that do make them, they're pretty happy with the end product. I mean, they surprise themselves.
Yeah.
Which is good. Especially the kids, they really enjoy it. Once they get into the actual weaving part of it, it's really, you know, they're really happy with their work.
That's good. Yeah, I like this book that you were showing us here that they put this together for you and had it
bound. Is that the word you're looking for?
Yeah, they produced it. You know, is this just a one time book? They just made it for
yeah. I can get. No, they made other copies.
Did they?
But there are smaller versions of it.
Uh-huh.
But I can still probably get some copies. So.
Yeah, this is a really nice book. I mean, that's the thing, is I don't think most people even know about Black Ash Basketry. Uh-huh. And then to have this beautiful book of you working with the students, and even the pictures of the baskets that the students produced, they're beautiful. You can tell it's the teacher, you know, made that happen. I was just going to ask if there's a way people can get a copy of that book so our listeners could, you know, if they were interested, where they would look for a copy of that book. Cause
they would have to probably contact a charter school, because they would know the publishing company.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's probably their best option. Because I think they had to get it done out east someplace, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh,
has anybody ever actually videoed your craft?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did it in Mille Lacs.
Oh, great.
And they did it in, they did one up in Fond du Lac years ago. I don't know how that really turned out. So there's a couple places they have.
So what kind of advice would you give someone that was thinking about being a basket maker? What would you share with them?
Well, I would say, first of all, try it first, or you almost have to go with somebody that actually knows the process first, because you just can't go out in the woods and grab a log, and you know, you gotta go through all the steps, you know.
Right.
My luck, I wouldn't even grab an ash.
Well, yeah, a lot of the trees look the same out there, believe me. Yeah. But, and you know, and then of course they gotta have an interest in it, and they gotta realize there's a lot of physical work to it.
Yeah.
I think that's the part where you mean we gotta do that? Well, yeah, you know, it's the only way you can do it, you know.
And if you want to learn, it's
gonna split itself.
And if you want to learn, you got to start from the get go. You can't wait for half the process to get done for you.
Right.
It'd be nice. I'd like to love it too if somebody had all the strips ready for me, and then all I had to do is weave it. But you know that's not gonna happen.
There aren't any.
No short. There's really no shortcuts. I guess I should say.
There's no strip fairies.
No.
What would
no
you strip, call them?
Yeah.
Black ash bones.
Yeah.
Yep. Go out in the morning and there's a big pile of black ash strips waiting.
Yeah, that'd be nice, but that's, like I said, that's not going to happen.
So you have a shop somewhere? You work in a different space?
Yeah.
So you work year-round then?
Yes, there's one thing good about this material. You can do it year-round. Some things a person does, you just can't do it year-round.
Right.
The best time to work on this type of tree is May and June.
Okay.
It just pounds easier, and there's more moisture in the wood, and, just a lot easier to work with. That's the best time.
So that's the best time to harvest it?
Yes, May and June.
What if you harvest, because obviously it would be easier to get the log in the wintertime. What if you harvest the log in the wintertime? It's just not going to pound out as easy as if you...
Well, in the wintertime, what you got to do is you got to heat the log up. I used to heat the log up kind of overnight. I could burn the wood in the shop because it's completely frozen.
Right.
Because all of the water content in the tree. Mm-hmm. So you got to let it thaw out before you can even start working on it. So wintertime's a lot slower process.
Yeah.
You got to use a jaw knife to pull all the bark off, and then you got to pound it, make sure it's all thawed out.
So stick to May and June for harvest.
Yeah, but you're doing it year round. You don't have any choice. You're going to be getting material.
How long does the strips, do you soak the strips if you...
What I if you put them in a plastic container pretty much as soon as I get them off the log. Because they dry out so quick.
Okay, so I was thinking of time and, all this type of stuff. What if you went out and harvested a whole bunch in May and June? Could you make your strips and keep your strips so that you could make baskets all year round?
I never take more than usually... Now, in the wintertime, or right now it would be all right because it's cooling off, I would probably get maybe 3 or 4 logs if I could, and that would last me till the spring. But in the summertime, you usually only want to get 1 log at a time, maybe 2, because you don't want them to dry out on you. I have to keep them tarped up and keep them wetted down.
Oh, okay.
Because you don't want these trees to dry out on you, otherwise you get real problems then.
Oh, okay.
And you don't, I'm taking that you don't want to let them dry out and then soak them and let them dry out and soak them. I try.
If you can stay away, if you can stay away from that, yeah.
It got harder and harder every time.
Yeah. Well, it kind of discolors the wood too.
Yeah.
So you want to use it as soon as you can off the log. And I take so many strips off. If I know, if I'm going to put up 2 little baskets, I just normally take enough strips off the log just to do them too, and I'll leave the rest on the log. I'm not going to pound the whole log and then have that material setting there for 2 or 3 weeks because, you're taking a chance of it drying on you.
Okay.
So I take as need be.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I know that some, out Michigan way where they've, had the ash borer devastating their forests, that some people had the forethought to go and harvest the ash before it was damaged by the ash borer, and then they were sinking the logs in the lake, and they were going to pull them out as needed. They were thinking that that would be one way to protect their trade. Well, how do you think those that would work?
I don't know.
No?
I don't really know.
That sounds like a trial and error.
Yeah, well, I think it was. They were just trying to figure out how to... Make sure
I see what you mean.
They were going to lose everything, so it wasn't, they
one
weren't
way
hurting
or another, way or another, it was...
I just always wondered, I never got to talk to those people again to find out
I'm thinking you couldn't do that too long of a time because I think you'd get water rot in the logs.
Yeah.
Submerge at time.
Yeah.
Because you'll see ash trees right out there now that if we have a rainy year... And if they're sitting in this much water all year long, eventually it's going to kill them. They got to have a certain amount of water, and they can't be in standing water. A few of them can, but not too long. It'll eventually kill them.
They like to have their roots wet, but they don't like...
Yeah, yeah.
They like to be drowning.
Right.
Have you ever, when you were starting out, did you ever accidentally, like, get a white ash or something? Have you ever tried to split?
Does that work? Yes, you can use white ash. You can? Some people call them green ash, white ash.
Mm-hmm.
No, that'll still work.
Oh, does it?
But with black ash, it's a little more flexible, so it's a little easier to work with.
Oh, okay.
I was wondering what the difference was.
Yeah.
Because
you can still make baskets out of the other type of ash.
I didn't know that, because that's my thing. If I was going to get a tree out, I really don't... I'm not that good at identification between the black and the...
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the number of leaves, and then if you're going when it's leaf off, you know, how do you know?
Yeah, the bark is a little deeper.
Is it?
A little deeper on a green ash or white ash.
Oh, okay.
It's just the grain is a little bit, you know, deeper in it.
Okay.
Whereas your black ash, if you look at it from a distance, it almost looks kind of silver, and the bark is actually kind of smooth.
Oh, okay.
And your black ash or your green ash, they can live in more elevated areas, whereas your black ash, they want to be in a lower area.
Oh.
Lower areas. I suppose it's easier for them to get their, you know, moisture, you know, right. And holer moisture.
Well, there you go, Shirley. That's how you tell them apart.
Well, I'm just not quite sure. So what all do you need for tools? Is it basically got to have chainsaw, cut your tree down, but your draw knife?
You got a draw knife. Of course, you got to have your scissors, you know. The only specialized thing is the cutters I have, where I put the actual strip in the cutter, and it's kind of like a clamp with razor blades in, and I pull them through.
That's
how I get my strips. Otherwise, you'd be cutting all your strips with the scissors, you know.
Hand.
and then cut it straight and all that, you know. Uh-huh. So other than that, that's, you don't need a whole lot of tools, really, to do this.
I seen somebody had some kind of wood kind of thing that they were using to help.
Split
the
I've used those too, but I've just learned how to split the way I got taught. But I've seen these tools too. They bring them up from underneath, and they're like two pieces of wood come together, and then you draw it up and pull them, draw it up and pull.
Yep, split them that way.
Mm-hmm. But no, they work fine too.
So do you do it the same way your dad did, or do you have?
Yeah, I split and pound everything the same way my dad did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The lengths I take are about 5.5 feet in length. I don't take an 8 foot. The less pounding you can save yourself, the better. You know. Yeah. So.
What kind of hammer do you use for pounding?
I use a 2.5 pound maul, kind of a short handled one. And that's the size I use. That work seems to work the best. You don't want them too heavy, of course, and then you don't want them too light. That weight seems to work out the best for me.
2.5 pounds of... That can get heavy after a while.
Well, yeah, it gets heavy, but... Yeah, take your breaks, you know. That's what all you're going to do. I don't have anybody standing over me, you know, like a foreman or something. You know, so.
Get to work, Esty.
Yeah, that's it.
So you're planning on... You got anybody you're passing it on to besides the mentors that you had, like do Gijigan? Is there, you have kids or anybody that's going to pick it up, and so that, you know, the Esty baskets will always be out there?
Well, you know, that's kind of tough to say. That depends on the individual, you know, whether they want to carry it on. Hopefully, you know, I have a couple of nephews that know how to do it.
Oh, good.
So hopefully they'll keep it going through the family.
That would be good.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
It's kind of nice, because that's really cool when you say I'm a third generation basket maker. How cool is that to say? You know? So I was wondering if there was somebody that's going to say I'm a fourth generation.
Someday, yeah. That could very well happen. Mm-hmm.
Come a time just like you.
Yep.
Time to, you know, I got to pick this up and keep her going. Very cool. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to share your art with us.
You're welcome.
Beautiful baskets.
Thank you.
And a very cute little dog. This program has been funded by the Legacy Arts, Culture, and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.